This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Rock legend Keith Richards' book, Life, won top honors at this year's Audie Awards, while writer Walter Dean Meyer's poetry collection here in Harlem snagged Best Production. Presented by the Audio Publishers Association, the Audies style themselves as the Oscars for audiobooks, a medium which continues to grow more mainstream and more popular, but which faces a challenge similar to publishers of print books: revenue. Between high production costs and often free competition, like radio, audiobook publishers find themselves experimenting with different ideas to stay afloat. So what makes them worth buying for you? Give us a call. 800-989-8255 is our telephone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, we'll speak with Serbian Ambassador Vladimir Petrovic about the arrest of General Ratko Mladic and the legacy of Srebrenica. But first, audio producer Arnie Cardillo joins us from our bureau in New York. He's fresh off his win at this year's Audie Awards for Distinguished Achievement in Production. Nice to have you on the program today, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And a lot of people probably think, what's the big deal? You stick a narrator in a sound booth, and there you go.
Not on a production like here in Harlem. We had 13 narrators. We had to license from the music publishers and the record labels a number of pre-recorded performances from the 1930s and 40s and 50s. Casting took a while. There was a series of recording sessions to get everyone in. We needed a spreadsheet to keep track of all the comings and goings. Then there was, after the recordings were made, there's sitting down to sort of storyboard each poem to determine what additional music and sound elements you want to add to and mix in with the narrator and the in this poem. This, as I said, it was set in the 30s and 40s, so we wanted to create a sense of time and place and recreate the landscape of Harlem.
Well, let's give people a taste of what it sounds like. Here's an example of how complicated the mixing can get.
George Ambrose, 33, English teacher. My heart must rise and go now to that bright Harlem street where buildings trude in ragtime and Congo rhythms meet. I'll build a storefront church there, spread amens through the pews, snatch up my cross, and gladly tithe my dues. Here will I find the sainted, the weak ones and the strong, 1,000 mournful voicings, one sweet and tender song.
That's Charles Turner narrating for the production of Walter Dean Meyer's Here in Harlem, Poems in Many Voices. That sound bed underneath him, you got to get his reading right, but that sound bed underneath him, that's a complicated piece of production.
Yes, there are a lot of diverse elements. I started thinking of it as being like a sound montage. The speaker in the poem is walking down the streets of Harlem. He's hearing all the diverse sounds from the music coming from the churches and the cars and the people and all of the street sounds that together make up the a composite that or a montage of the sound of Harlem, and so we tried to use that technique to enrich the experience and again get the characters get everything set in a certain period.
We want to hear from listeners what makes audiobooks worth it when there's so much other competition around, much of which is free these days. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Susan's on the line calling us from Anchorage.
Hi, I'm a huge audiobook fan, and I agree the quality of the production is really important. Most of my books I've gotten off audible.com, and one of the things is you can listen to a preview of the audio, and you get a sense of this is something you'd be willing to listen to. I recently listened to The Emperor of All Maladies, which I think is about 20 hours, a fantastic book, a nonfiction book, very technical. But I don't know that I could have gotten through the print version, but I really enjoyed listening to it. But particularly in fiction books, another book I loved was The Inheritance of Lost, and I think I would have been very frustrated about India of trying to pronounce all the names.
Oh, yeah.
Fabulous narrator. I mean, it was just one of my favorites. And, of course, The Help was dramatized. Now, I don't have to have the book dramatized. If it's a really good reader, one voice works for me. Sometimes there are two, sometimes more. But The Inheritance of Loss was just a fabulous production. And the last point I wanted to make is my partner's dyslexic. And he, before I met him, he wasn't doing much reading. And after I listen to the book and like it, he usually listens. And so it's a real way for people who may have trouble reading to read, and you can read while you're doing everything else, running, exercising, cleaning the house, doing gardening. It's a great way to increase your reading.
And you want to sample it because you're settling down for what may be, what, 8, 10, 12 hours with a book?
Oh, yeah, and it flies by. My only problem is, I do have a thing on my iPod where I go to sleep at night. We both go to sleep listening to books. But I set the thing to go off in an hour because they do eventually put me to sleep. But although Unbroken did not put me to sleep. I was up till 3 in the morning finishing Unbroken.
And how much do you generally pay for an audiobook, Susan?
Well, what I've done with Audible is they have a thing where you get a book every month.
Uh-huh.
So I pretty much get one every month, but then they have sales come along, or we sometimes decide to buy extras. And I think I haven't researched enough. You can get a lot of these from the library, but we're hearing about new books, and a lot of times we want to read them right away. And I do have a Kindle and a Nook and all that on my iPad, so I do that kind of book as well. But I find the audiobooks just much more convenient since I'm a runner. I really enjoy listening while I run.
All right, Susan, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And Arnie Cardillo, there's a voice for your industry. There's a vote. And the production values make it worth it, but they also make it expensive to make them, don't they?
Very, yes. You hope that you'll get a return on your investment, and winning an award helps a lot.
Does it?
Yes.
How much of a difference might it make in sales?
Well, it could increase sales tenfold. There's an award given out by the American Library Association called the Odyssey Award, which is considered the best children's or young adult audiobook of the year, and we can see sales go up 20, 30 times normal sales because of winning that award.
Mm-hmm. And how much are you going to charge, or do you charge, for Here in Harlem, which is obviously a richly textured production?
Yeah, there are two CDs, and we charge $22.95 for the CD version of it. You can go on Audible or other digital download sites to receive it as well, and it's usually a little less because we don't have the actual physical cost to produce.
Hmm. Here's an email from Marion. Just as I believe that a good director is more important than a great actor, I believe a good narrator can make a mediocre book both interesting and entertaining. Of course, to be blessed with both a great book and a great narrator is a gift. One of my favorite narrators is Davina Porter. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. This from Kathy. I enjoy audiobooks as well as digital, Kindle, and traditional books, usually having one in progress in each medium at the same time. For audiobooks, I think I can multitask reading a book and doing chores or errands. I also listen at double speed, so I'm not so enamored of the dramatic reading or complex production. Just want a reader with a clear voice and proper pronunciation. And I guess Arnie, that goes to show that it's different things to different people.
Yes, you don't. If you're listening at double speed, you just want information. Obviously, you're not concerned about the dramatic performance or the.
And if you're a fan of audiobooks, you probably know our next guest, or at least you know his voice. George Goodell has recorded over 900 unabridged novels, has 2 Audi Awards under his belt. He joins us now by phone from New York City, where I gather you're working, George.
That's right. I'm not now, but I was working.
Hi, George.
Is that Arnie Cardillo?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Arnie, how you doing?
Good. George and I have worked together on numerous books.
And what makes it worth it, do you think, George, when for a listener, for an audiobook?
What makes it worth it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a great question. The first thing is that it's a very basic, essential human need for people to hear stories. I mean, the opportunity to have vicarious experiences, to listen to books that would whose purpose is only to make people happy, sad, thoughtful, pensive. I mean, I just finished the unabridged Les Miserables, and that'll be about 60 discs.
Wow.
It was a wonderful trip, and people who listened to the classics would certainly appreciate it, and yet at the same time, I love doing Westerns because it's a lot of fun, and they happen to be very honest books because they don't pretend to be anything else but an adventure in the desert. So people have different reasons for going to a particular genre, but essentially it's to have a story told to them. You know, if you don't hear a story being told to you, you're not really conscious. If nobody's reading to you, you're talking to yourself, aren't you? So that satisfies a very basic need of people to hear something going on in their heads.
People can hear. You obviously have a terrific voice. You're an actor as well as acting in audiobooks, but how did you come to specialize in this?
Well, I'll tell you, at first, I had no idea of the fact that it would become the phenomenon that it is. When I started, there were only about two companies doing it, and that was about 20 years ago. And it was just a job between shows. And after I did about three or four Westerns, this was for Talking Books, which was the Library of Congress that I was working for. And I said, you know, I can do something else other than Westerns. So the man in charge then started me on other books, and I realized that there was something happening here. It was not just a gig between shows. It was something that was satisfying a great range of people in different situations, whether they were unsighted, sighted, whether they were doing something with their hands. It was beginning to show itself as something that was on the horizon as a major phenomenon for people to involve themselves in various levels of life, depending on who they listen to.
Well, George Goodell, here's an email from one of your fans. Matthew, I'm a huge fan of yours. Your narrative style is what got me into audiobooks. I was never a huge reader, but on my honeymoon, I picked up Stephen King, The Dark Tower series, and was hooked from there. I still see the beach and hear you reading the opening line, the man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed.
Wait a minute, how'd you get my email?
We're talking about...
one of my favorite emails is...
Audiobooks, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about audiobooks today. More than a third of American adults in one survey said they've listened to one. And audiobook listeners are also big readers. 90% of them reported reading at least one book the previous year. The most common genre of books that people listen to? Mysteries, thrillers, and suspense. The survey was released late last year by the Audio Publishers Association. With so much competition from technology like iPods and podcasts and radio, what makes audiobooks worth buying for you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. George Goodell is one of the best-known names in the business. He's recorded over 900 audiobooks in the past two decades and picked up a couple of Audi Awards in the process. He's also an actor. And Arnie Cardillo, who owns Live Oak Media and produced Here in Harlem, Poems in Many Voices, also with us. That project won for Distinguished Achievement in Production at this week's Audi Awards. And Arnie, what was the ceremony like?
It was wonderful. They had a reception before the award presentations. We went into a theater, and it was a very pleasant experience for everyone. It was there used to be a time when it would be a long, drawn-out process, but they've streamlined the event, and it's wonderful.
Is it one of those where you know you won going in, or are they opening an envelope?
No, not at all. It's an opening an envelope, and you find out right on the spot.
Let's get Garrett on the line. Garrett with us from Salt Lake City.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Garrett. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I pick the readers, the books by readers, and there's three readers I really enjoy, and that's Scott Frick, Tom Stick, Schulte, and, of course, George Goodell. And they really bring the story to life. So you can have a mediocre book, and, you know, with them reading it, it makes it interesting and very palatable.
So you go particularly for the narrators as opposed to the authors?
Exactly. You know, I'll go and search out books just based on who the reader is, and then I'll listen to those.
Thanks very much, Garrett. That's interesting.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Mary. My favorite audiobooks are those narrated by the author. Of course, that's not always possible, but when it is, I prefer them just as I prefer unabridged over abridged books. On a long solo drive last week, I inadvertently added an hour to my driving time by becoming so absorbed and entertained by Jill Connor Brown's The Sweet Potato Queen's Guide to Raising Children for Fun and Profit that I wasn't paying attention to things like highway signs and the proper exit. So, George Goodell, I assume when you get compliments like that, that kind of makes your day.
Oh, it makes more than my day. It's a very rewarding thing that you end up doing. And I'll tell you, in all the experience I've had in theater, nothing quite comes up to the feedback you get from fans who are so committed to the audiobook phenomenon and committed to the narrator also. You were talking about email before.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite emails is a guy who was in Montana driving the freeway there somewhere, and it was at night, and he was listening to Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, and he was so into it that he missed his exit, and he had a backup at night on the thruway or freeway, and he backed into an 18-wheeler. And he was writing me this letter from the hospital in which he was thanking me for the opportunity he now had to finish listening to Crime and Punishment.
I don't want to give it away, but Raskolnikov did it.
Pardon me?
I didn't want to give it away, but Raskolnikov did it.
Yes, he did. But that was, I mean, that's an example of the commitment that people have to it.
It's also, acting on stage is one thing. When you're narrating an audiobook, you're literally in people's heads.
That's correct. And in people's heads, what happens is that there is a very specific relationship built with the listener. And oftentimes, you'll hear people say, I want a book by George Goodell or Tom Steck-Schulte, or whoever their favorite narrator is, because a bond has happened between this person bringing them some kind of emotional experience and the listener's empathy with that. So when those empathic responses match, your relationship is built with this person talking to you, so they come back for more of the same voice. And very often I do a library show. It's called The Art and Artifice of Audiobook Narration. And as I tour the country, one time a person came up to me after a show and said, Mr. Goodell, my wife thinks you have the sexiest voice in the audiobook industry. Now that I see you, I'm not worried. That's because I have some gray hairs on my head. But, you know, that relationship is built in people's heads, and always a surprise to people when I come see them and say, my God, that's who that character was.
Who are you narrating now?
I am narrating an Icelandic mystery, which is very interesting because Icelandic towns have 17 syllables, none of the letters of which are pronounced the way they look. So it's taking me a little longer to come through it, but it's a very good book. Indretas Son is the author's name. Don't ask me to repeat it because I probably am saying it incorrectly. But it's a fascinating experience. Here it's in Iceland, and it gives me the opportunity to speak Icelandic.
Probably a skill you didn't know you had until very recently.
I'm not sure whether I have it or not.
Well, George Goodell, we'll let you get back to work. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Take it easy, Arnie.
See you, George.
And let's bring Janet Benson into the conversation. She's president of the Audio Publishers Association, the organization behind the Audio Awards, and joins us today from the studios of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Nice to have you with us.
A pleasure to be here.
And it's interesting. Obviously, audiobooks have come a long, long way, yet you've also written a piece recently in which you acknowledge there's some serious challenges.
Right. Financially, we touched on that a little bit just with the cost of production. We've often been compared as an industry to the transitions that the print industry is going through with going to e-books, or the transition that the music industry suffered through, shall I say, with music costs and downloads. And one thing that needs to be remembered in that is that we are adding a performance that adds a value to the book, that spoken word reaching out to you, speaking directly to your ear. And it's also a much longer experience, obviously, when you're talking about 17 or 30 CDs, even for some of these audiobooks.
And given all of that, the price has to be competitive with, well, free.
Exactly. And that's not an easy challenge to meet, but I don't know how we're going to do it. If I did, I'd be being hired as a consultant right now. But
Here's an email we have from Michael in Jacksonville. As a mystery writer myself, I wrote the Joe Kuzmarski series, published by St. Martin's Press and produced on audio by Blackstone Audiobooks. I wonder whether the guests think the growth of electronic texts is good or bad for audio. In the writing and publishing community, we worry about the diminishing use of paper and ink, even as we try to make the most of going electric. In this huge sea change, where do audiobooks end up? Janet Benson?
Well, it's interesting. I've seen a couple of samples recently, and it's not fully mainstream yet, of a system where the e-book and the audiobook are integrated. So you wake up in the morning, and over your breakfast cereal, you're reading your book and, you know, having your coffee. Then you switch over into your car, and you switch on the machine, and it's now going to pick up exactly where you left off on the page, and the audiobook narrator begins. And that kind of flexibility, I think, can only be good for the fans of audiobooks.
Arnie Cardillo, I wonder what you think of that.
Well, Live Oak Media is primarily a producer of children's recordings. We record children's books, and many of our products are combined with the book in the form of a read-along. So we sell these primarily to schools and libraries. So the format is changing. There are a lot of e-books, and there are a lot of e-picture books now, and we're working, we should by the fall have the combination ebook audio package for kids to have the read-along experience, excuse me, the read-along experience digitally.
Well, let's get another caller in on the conversation. We'll go to Ellen. Ellen with us from Grand Rapids.
Hi, am I there?
You are.
Hi, I'm Ellen. I'm a college student, and I grew up listening to Harry Potter tapes. For me, having the audiobook actually enhanced my imagination. You weren't seeing someone else's pictures, but you were hearing someone else's words. So after reading the book for the first time, I knew how the author wanted to pronounce Hermione, and I could picture them, you know, having their adventures. And so I think it does is create another outlet for imagination and allows you, you know, my sister and I would put literally the same tape in every night before we went to sleep until we had every word memorized. And, you know, there's tape scattered all over our house now, and I think for me it was just all about the imagination of it.
Do you still buy them today?
I own them all, so I don't need to. But I own all the Harry Potter ones, but I do still buy audiobooks today. And because I'm of the technology generation, I do a lot of downloading. But to me, you still pay for those. So I guess, like, it's not really hurting the industry, I hope. And I think the biggest way people get them is probably through their local libraries.
Mm-hmm.
I know right now I'm actually traveling to see my family, and I have a 12-hour trip right now. So I have an audiobook, and it makes the time go 10 times faster.
Well, Ellen, we're glad you still enjoy the radio, too.
Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. And it's interesting, Janet Benson, you've got, you're selling, you know, product. You're selling CDs, but you're also selling downloads, and, well, there's a price difference there, isn't there?
There usually is, yes, because, of course, you're not paying for the CD production cost, the actual making of the CD, as well as the distribution to a bookstore.
Let's see if we can get some other callers in on the conversation. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie with us from Washington, Arkansas.
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. The comment I have to make is audiobooks are very necessary to me. I am widowed, so I'm alone. I don't hear a human voice. And I'm going blind. And so the last 3.5 years, I've gone to the public library. I'm a little bit limited on income.
Mm-hmm.
And I've checked out every audiobook in a 4-county area. But with the budget cuts, I've used them all up.
Used them all up?
Yes. So I'm encouraging people who have the money to buy them after they listen to them a few times. Please give them to the library. And I just found out a couple of weeks ago that I'm eligible for a reading service blind from the state.
And?
And I'm going to sign up for that, and it's going to be a digital format of books.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, Charlie. And
but it's very necessary for people like me who can't get out much.
I can understand that.
Please keep them.
Janet Benson, this is how the industry really got its start, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. The library market was one of our first pickups. We find that most people who are audiobook fans started by checking one out of the library on their way on a long trip, and the hours fly by, and suddenly they are hooked.
But it also began as a service for reading for the blind.
Absolutely, right. And also, the Reading for the Blind is still there. And in fact, 20 years ago when I started in the industry, any audiobook professional will tell you they've heard this. Oh, I work in audiobooks. Oh, you mean for the blind? Well, yes, but not only for the blind. And we don't hear that anymore. We've become mainstream, and people have come back to realizing just how wonderful it is to have a story told to you.
And here's an email from Jessica in Tennessee. I love audiobooks because while sitting at my desk working, I can be in a completely different world. Audiobooks make me feel that I'm in the story, and while sitting at my desk, I'm transported to a small southern town in the 1960s or in a dark lair with vampires, and none of my coworkers around me have any idea. And this is from Kate in St. Augustine. While I remain a printed word purist and love to hold a book in my hands while I take in a story, I've listened to audiobooks while traveling with my son. Since we almost exclusively read and listen only while in the car, entertainment value in narration is key. The Pythons, autobiography by the Pythons and read by a few of them, should be required listening. So should anything by P.G. Woodhouse. When I was a teacher, I also found that suggesting that students listen to required reading on audio, sometimes in tandem with following along with the book, helped a tremendous amount of my students who were either challenged with reading skills or otherwise apathetic readers. We're talking about audiobooks. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And our guests are Arnie Cardillo, who's the owner of Live Oak Media, just won the Audie Award for Here in Harlem, Poems in Many Voices. Also with us, Janet Benson, who's president of the Audio Publishers Association. Let's go next to Audrey. Audrey with us from Boulder.
Hi. I travel a lot here in the West. It's a lot of long stretches, and I listen to a lot of audiobooks. Love George Goodall, but the two books that really changed it for me, books that I had read before, you know, with my eyes and listened to, one was Amy Tan's 100 Secret Senses, where Amy Tan read it, and also Lolita by Jeremy Irons. And those books were completely different stories when I heard them in someone else's voice than the voice that I have in my head reading them, and it's made a huge difference.
Of course, Nabokov wrote Lolita. Jeremy Irons narrated it.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Okay. And you know, all I can say is she sounded that nasty little girl. It was a completely different story than when I read it myself, where, Humbert was a terrible person.
Okay. Audrey, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. And Arnie Cardillo, it must add an awful lot to production when you have to bring in a talent like Jeremy Irons. So that can't be cheap.
No. Working with a celebrity just adds to the cost of the production. And but, you know, it's a great, again, as George said, it's an opportunity to do something other and experience another mode of performance for the actors and actresses. So I think they enjoy doing it, and sometimes they're very reasonable in their expectations.
Sometimes they're reasonable. Sometimes. Elizabeth in Denver, Colorado emails, how does one begin a career as a producer of audiobooks? And I guess, Arnie, that's to you.
It's not easy. I mean, it's hard to start from ground zero or scratch and then try to develop a line of audiobooks. I had a background in sound engineering, sound editing, and it became the platform for me to then develop my skills and become a producer.
Janet Benson, are people knocking down the walls to become audiobook producers?
You know, we have more people knocking down the walls to be narrators because their children tell them their voice is wonderful, and they don't realize the long hours of studio time than the challenge that it is to actually knocking out a great audiobook. Producers, there's always more opportunities. The challenges are there. If you're looking to do a book that's been published, then you need to clear the rights with the publisher who did the print book. You have to figure out, you know, who you're going to have narrate and what channels you can use to sell it. But it's an open industry, and our website, audiopub.org, can tell a lot of people the basics of audiobook industry and how to break in.
Well, let's see if we get one more caller in, and have to make it quick, David. David's calling us from Sandy Springs, Oklahoma.
Yes, and a quick question. How often do authors narrate their own books? I mean, I've heard interviews with authors, and they had kind of the voice of the character of a jellyfish, maybe, but some of them, especially the ethnic ones, You mentioned Amy Tan tonight.
Okay. We have to make it quick, David. Janet Benson, is there a breakdown on how often authors read their own books, or you hire golden-voiced radio announcers?
there you go, Neil. You can call me anytime. There's not really a breakdown on that. The publisher has to decide, does that person have the voice, and will they have the stamina?
Okay. David, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And we want to thank our guest, Janet Benson, who's the president of the Audio Publishers Association, with us from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
And Arnie Cardillo, again, congratulations on your Audi Award.
Thank you very much.
Arnie Cardillo is the owner of Live Oak Media. His Audi Award was for Here in Harlem, Poems in Many Voices. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Up next, the most wanted fugitive in Europe captured today in Serbia 16 years after his indictment for war crimes. We'll talk with Serbian Ambassador Vladimir Petrovic about the arrest of Ratko Mladic and the legacy of Srebrenica. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.